33 minutes after the hour, America, it's Hugh Hewitt. Pleased to welcome back to the Hugh Hewitt Show, the next Vice President of the United States, Indiana Governor Mike Pence. Governor Pence, good to have you on the show. Welcome and congratulations on your nomination as the GOP's candidate for the Vice Presidency.
Thank you, Hugh. It's great to be back on, and we couldn't be more honored, couldn't be more humbled to have the opportunity to run and serve with the next President of the United States.
There is a lot to cover. I want to begin on a somewhat lighthearted note. Secretary Clinton's big night last night. She's given a speech. It's not the greatest speech. Bill Clinton falls asleep. Your opponent, Tim Kaine, is sitting next to him, and he has a pro move. He sees the camera and kind of leans in to try and block the camera. But does Mike Pence elbow Donald Trump at that point in order to wake him up, or do you just try and block the camera?
Only the Hugh Hewitt Show would have that video already up online. I hadn't seen it till this morning. And it was late. But let me assure you, having been on the road with Donald Trump most of this week, there would never be a need for an elbow. I've never been around anybody who's more energetic, more determined, more focused. I mean Donald Trump's energy level, his commitment, his devotion to the American people just radiates out of every minute that I've been with him. So I can't imagine it would ever happen. But I got to tell you, I was having a hard time staying awake listening to Hillary Clinton last night.
You and me both. But Tim Kaine, I give him like props. It was a pro move. You've seen the video. He leans in to try and block the fact. All right, let's go to the biggest vulnerability of the secretary. I use the mnemonic device, every liberal really seems so, so sad, to bring up Egypt, Libya, the Russian reset button, Syria, the status of forces agreement or server in Supreme Court. You were on the Foreign Affairs Committee, I think, for a dozen years, were you not?
Yeah, at least 10, right.
All right. Did any of her attempts, Egypt, Libya, Russia, Syria, did any of them do other than fail miserably?
It's just extraordinary to think of the record of Secretary of State Hillary Clinton. I don't know that we've had a more disastrous tenure for a Secretary of State in American history, particularly in the wider Middle East. I mean, literally everywhere that this administration has touched has just spun apart. And what was remarkable about the speech last night is she just seemed to double down on the failed policies of this administration at home and abroad. And I think last night the American people heard the other half of the debate that's going to go on for the next 100 days. Hugh, is that, you know, if you like declining American power in the world, if you like a stifled and struggling economy at home, then Hillary Clinton is your choice. She doubled down on the liberalism, they like to call it progressivism, of the recent past, and Donald Trump laid out a vision for a stronger America at home and abroad, freeing up the American economy, rebuilding a military, confronting our enemies, law and order at home, and I think the contrast could not be more clear.
Now, I'll come back to Egypt, Libya, the Russian reset, Syria, and her failure to negotiate a status of forces agreement, which lost the peace in Iraq. But I want to focus on the server for a moment. Yesterday, Donald Trump got into exchange with Katie Tour. I do not approve, by the way, of him telling Katie Tour to be quiet. But nevertheless, this is the exchange that he had with Katie Tour that launched a million commentaries yesterday. Can we play that clip?
It's up to the president. Let the president talk to him. Look, here's the problem. Here's the problem, Katie. Katie, here's the problem. Very simple. He has no respect.
You said I welcome them to find those 30,000.
Well, they probably have them. I'd like to have them released.
Does that
not give you
pause?
No, gives me no pause. If they have them, they have them. We might as well find. Hey, you know what gives me more pause? That a person in our government, crooked Hillary Clinton, here's what gives me more. Be quiet. I know you want to, you know, save her. That a person in our government, Katie, would delete or get rid of 33,000 emails. That gives me a big problem. After she gets a subpoena, she gets subpoenaed, and she gets rid of 33,000 emails. That gives me a problem. Now, if Russia or China or any other country has those emails, I mean, to be honest with you, I'd love to see them.
Now, Governor Pence, last year, Mike Morrell, former deputy director of the CIA, former acting director mm-hmm. of the CIA, longtime public servant, 30 years, bipartisan, was on this show and had this to say about Hillary Clinton's server. What did you make of the Secretary of State having a private server in her house?
So I don't think that was a very good judgment. I don't know who gave her that advice, but it was not good advice. You know, she's paying a price for it now. It was not good.
As a professional matter, do you believe that at least one or perhaps many foreign intelligence services have everything that went to and from that server?
So I think that foreign intelligence services, the good ones, have everything on any unclassified network that the government uses, whether it's a private server or a public one. They're that good.
So that's a yes.
Yep.
And this is Rudy Giuliani to my colleague Mike Gallagher yesterday, Governor Pence, talking about whether or not the Russians have Hillary Clinton's private emails.
The reality is, I will tell you, Mike, my company, Giuliani Partners, and my law firm, Greenberg Traurig, we do cybersecurity for a living.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been doing it for 13 years, so it's a subject I know. The Russians have those emails. They've had them for some time.
All right, so Governor Pence, do you agree that the Russians have Hillary Clinton's emails?
Well, I don't know that we know at all. I don't know who would have them. I know there's the possibility that they do. And the reason there's a possibility that some foreign power is in possession of what could well be classified information concerning the government of the United States is because of what has been clearly demonstrated is that Hillary Clinton compromised that classified information by using a private server. But look, you know, Donald Trump and I have been very clear on this. If it is found that Russia or China or any other foreign power compromised the private email or captured classified information and then released that information through the WikiLeaks release or otherwise, there'll be serious consequences for that. But I think what you hear Donald Trump saying is he's just calling into high relief that there were, 33,000 emails that we were told were just wedding plans and private conversations between family, 33,000 emails that should have been turned over to the FBI in their investigation vanished. He's just simply saying, gosh, if they're out there somewhere, I would like to see them. I bet the overwhelming majority of the American people and certainly in the media, his point the other day is, would like to see them. You know, Abraham Lincoln said, give the people the facts and the republic will be saved. I mean, I think that's the point that he's making. He's not encouraging some foreign power to compromise the security of this country. He's just making the kind of candid reflection that the thing about Donald Trump that I've found so refreshing is that the man says what the majority of folks are thinking. And doesn't worry about what the media has to say about that. But rest assured, if there is, the FBI will get to the bottom of where these WikiLeaks emails came from that show such collusion between Hillary Clinton's campaign and the Democratic National Committee to shut Bernie Sanders out and make all kinds of specious comments about religion and race. But beyond that, we'll hold them strictly accountable if that occurred. But the bottom line is that the people deserve to know what's happening here. And I think Donald Trump calling attention again to these emails this week was an important part of the narrative during the Democrat National Convention.
So, Governor Pence, if on WikiLeaks or anywhere else there appear any of the emails from Hillary Clinton's private server, whether they are the ones that were turned over to the state or the ones that she deleted, any of them, that will mean her server was compromised. If that happens,
right,
should she drop out of the race?
Well, I think the fact that, the FBI director in testimony before the Congress and in the announcement of his decision not to recommend charges basically listed a number of violations of the law that compromise classified information. I think that does disqualify her to serve as president of the United States. But look, her party nominated her this week, and they have chosen to put her on the ballot. Now, the American people have a choice to make. You know, whether they want someone who, in his address before the country, was willing to call out the level of corruption at the highest levels of government that, as Donald Trump said, he'd ever seen in his lifetime, or whether they want someone who, the speech last night was nothing new. It was just more of the same, more government, more of the same failed foreign policy. And I just think the choice could not be clearer. I mean, you got to hand it to Hillary Clinton last night. She doubled down on their big government liberal agenda on a weak foreign policy on the world stage. And so now we got 100 days to debate this before the American people.
Well, there is a long article at the New York Times about the Russian practice of kompromat, K-O-M-P-R-O-M-A-T, for those Steelers fans who are listening. And it means compromising someone. I think she's got to drop out if it comes on. But I'll move on, Governor. Let me ask you about a big criticism I have of Trump-Pence. You guys bar some reporters from your campaign, specifically the Washington Post. I've argued about this with Mr. Trump. It's not in the American tradition. Will you argue with him to lift that ban? Because reporters are part of the game, and we shouldn't ban. Republicans should not be afraid of reporters. Will you do that?
Well, I found out about that. We had a great rally the other night with Scott Walker in Wisconsin, and some of the local folks, asked for credentials from reporters, and there was a reporter that was not permitted in the setting. And I'll tell you, we're all talking about that. I have a long history, as you well know, Hugh, of advocating and defending for a free and independent press. I authored legislation in the Congress. We actually got it passed once or twice. To create the ability to keep confidential sources confidential. So we're going to have those conversations internally, and I fully expect in the next 100 days we're going to continue to be available to the media, whether they're fair or unfair, and we're going to take our case to the American people directly.
Yeah, I really hope you get the Post back in. I just think it's an unnecessary diversion. Now let's talk about defense policy. When I talk to Donald Trump about the particulars of defense policy, the nuclear triad, the Ohio-class submarine, it's like talking to an Englishman about football, right? They know when somebody scores, they've got the general idea, but if you talk about crackback blocking or baseball, if you talk about the infield fly rule, they lose it. Donald Trump has not spent his life, like you have, like I have, dealing with national security issues. When you talk with him, is he in the process of briefing up on these specifics?
Donald Trump is surrounding himself with an extraordinary group of men and women with capabilities. I think you saw it in the VFW speech this week, that is going to continue to lay out detailed policies in a broad range of areas. But you know what? It's not, I was really struck the other day. I saw President Obama in an interview. I forget where it was, but he said something about, he was concerned about having a president that didn't know stuff. It just reminded me of, I'll paraphrase something Ronald Reagan used to say. He says it's not what they don't know, it's what they know that just isn't so, right? I mean, we've got a president who's got this professorial air, and then we just heard that once again, same tone out of their nominee last night. And the truth of the matter is, it isn't that they understand they've got a handle on the nuclear triad, or they've got a handle on national security issues in our various alliances. It's just that they don't understand America's place in the world. They don't understand the obligations that we have as the arsenal of democracy, and they frankly don't understand the importance of unambiguous American leadership on the world stage. I mean, that to me is what is most appealing about Donald Trump, and the thousands of people who pour out. He and I hit the road this week, and he was in Iowa last night to an enormous crowd, and I was at his side in Virginia and in Florida and in Scranton, Pennsylvania, and people are turning out because they know this man is a distinctly American leader who's going to bring this clear-eyed, strong American leadership back onto the world stage, put America first, stand by our allies, and stand up to those who would oppose us and confront and destroy our enemies.
Now, you've been with him a lot. President Obama, two nights ago, called Donald Trump a demagogue after citing fascism, implying that he's a fascist demagogue. Hillary Clinton said last night, "I'm the only one," is actually code for breaking with American tradition. You have been with him. And Brett Stevens of the Wall Street Journal said he's a Mussolini in the making. What do you respond to those folks and to the Never Trump crowd generally about his lack of understanding of the limits of presidential power and governing in one of three separate branches?
It's been a privilege for me and my family to be able to spend time with Donald Trump and Melania and their kids. And I just have to tell you, the man that I see when the Klieg lights are off, is there. He is solicitous. He is bright. He is engaging. I will say he's extremely considerate and kind. They've been remarkably gracious to my family. But one of the things someone said to me yesterday, I just happened to make an offhand comment when we were in Grand Rapids campaigning. I did my first solo campaign swing day yesterday, and somebody asked me the same question, and I said, well, the thing about Donald Trump is he's constantly asking questions. He's constantly peppering people with questions, and I'm not talking about to the pollsters and the consultants. I'm saying, he's grabbing taxi cab drivers. He's grabbing elevator operators. When we're going in and out of events, he stops and talks to the police officers who are there. I mean, it is, I think it's the reason why he has such a connection with everyday Americans, is because in his heart and in his life, he has always been connected to those people.
So you dismissed the demagogue.
I don't think name calling has any place in public life. And I thought that was unfortunate that the president of the United States would use a term like that, let alone laced into a sentence like that. But I just don't see it. I think what I have found in Donald Trump is this is a man of enormous accomplishment. Obviously, someone who has achieved great things in his life. But he's really got a heart for the American people. And I think it comes from the fact that he's a builder. You know, like me, he's the grandson of an immigrant. He's the son of a self-made man. And he built on his father's success far and beyond anything that his family could imagine. And yet he's done that shoulder to shoulder with the people that lay the bricks and that cut the 2x4s and that build those structures up. And to see him among the people, not just on the campaign trail, that's exciting to be out and to see the enthusiasm that Americans of every stripe and every background have for this good man. But to see him, as I have, among the people who work with him and work for him, but to see their respect for his high standards, but their fondness for him convinces me this good man's going to be a great president of the United States.
Now, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar accused you, Mike Pence, by name last night of selling fear with the Religious Liberty Act in Indiana. They do not know, apparently, that many evangelicals were upset with you on the revision of the act. What's your response to Abdul-Jabbar and to the evangelicals?
Well, I always admire him as a basketball player, but I think we have pretty different opinions on policy. People who know me know I abhor discrimination, and I cherish the liberties that are enshrined in our Constitution, Hugh. Indiana, a little more than a year ago, passed a bill that was similar to the religious liberty bill that President Clinton signed back in the 1990s. It became a source of great controversy, and as the leader of the state of Indiana, I thought it was important that we take some measures to amend the bill to ensure people that it would not jeopardize the rights of anyone. We did that in a way that did not compromise the constitutional rights of any Hoosier, and we quelled the controversy, and our state has never been more prosperous. We were able to put that behind us and deal with it, and that's the long and the short of it.
My colleague at NBC and MSNBC last night, Rachel Maddow, said that you, Mike Pence, were all on board with the Muslim ban, having once denounced it. What's the truth?
Well, look, I expressed concern about the broad strokes that that Donald Trump first used in that regard, but I completely support his call to suspend the refugee program from countries that have been compromised by terrorism. In fact, in the state of Indiana, we were among the first states to suspend the Syrian refugee program in the wake of terrorist attacks late last year. And, you know, we were criticized for that. But I said at the time, and Donald Trump believes strongly that that whether it's the president of the United States or the governor of any state, we have no higher priority than the safety and security of our people. And I completely support Donald Trump's call to suspend immigration from any countries that have been compromised by terrorism, unless and until that has been quelled, or until we put into place the kind of vetting that the American people can know that people that are coming here don't represent a threat to our families and our communities.
Two last questions, Governor Pence. Everybody likes you in the party, so I'm wondering, win or lose, you are eligible to serve as the Republican National Committee chairman. It would be a first for a sitting vice president to do it, but there's no bar to that. Reince Priebus is there. He's doing a great job. But if he retires, would you serve as Republican National Committee chair, win or lose?
God, you do the Hugh Hewitt show, and you get these all completely fresh ideas. I'll tell you what, I believe we're going to win this election. I believe the energy and enthusiasm that we see. I mean, I wasn't there with him last night. We went our separate ways about a day ago after a couple of great days of campaigning together. But I saw the pictures from Iowa. I saw the huge crowds that we had in Michigan and Waukesha the night before. It would be the greatest honor of my life to serve as Vice President of the United States with Donald Trump as our president. And if I have that honor, I will focus all of my energies and all of my time and talent and prayers to that enterprise and none other.
Well, I want you doing multitasking, and here's the last one. The Supreme Court, I begin every hour of this radio show with the quote of Donald Trump talking about the Supreme Court, because it is everything. It's 30 years of American policy on the
more.
First and Second Amendment. Will you have a role in judge picking? Are you confident? This is so important for the Never Trump crowd to hear. Are you confident that he will put originalists in the mold of Scalia and Alito? And I say Chief Justice Roberts. A lot of my colleagues don't like it. We got 1 minute left. Are you confident, Mike Pence?
I am absolutely confident that Donald Trump will appoint Supreme Court justices in the tradition of the late and great Justice Antonin Scalia. And we were together at a public event the other day, and I'll just say he made a point at a town hall meeting to say that I would be involved in that publicly. But we've talked extensively about that. I think Donald Trump understands the enormous importance of the next president of the United States' role in appointing up to 2 to 3 justices to the Supreme Court. And I tell people, for the sake of the rule of law, for the sake of the sanctity of life, for the sake of the Second Amendment, the next president to appoint justices to the Supreme Court must be a president, Donald Trump.
Governor Indiana Mike Pence, thank you, Governor. Thanks for your son's service in the Marine Corps. It is going to be, you're clearly going to be on the Navy side of the Army-Navy game every week, but thank you for that as well. We'll be right back, America. Hour number 3 of the Hugh Hewitt Show.